Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
G'day everyone, welcome to the Bowlology Report. Hope everyone is staying safe. For us Melburnians, we're still in the corridor of caution. We're masking up and we want to get on top of this pandemic. Test match cricket's back. England levelling the series against the West Indies by winning the second test match. Ben Stokes dominated. Stuart Broad, very good with the ball. And Dom Sibley scoring 100, opening up for England. To go through this test match, we're indeed lucky to have an absolute beauty join us on the podcast. He's a journo for The Age, a crime writer with over 30 books, including the amazingly popular Underbelly series. He also appears weekly on his very good mates, Ross Stevenson's 3AW breakfast program. He's known as Sly of the Underworld. It's, of course, John Sylvester, who's a massive English cricket fan. So we'll ask him why that is and his thoughts on the England and West Indies Test Series. Also joining me is a cricketer known as Siri. He's a T20 cricket specialist superstar. He's played with franchises all around the globe. More importantly, he's probably won more T20 titles than any other cricketer. Powerful hitter, clever medium pacer and a brilliant fieldsman. He's also notable as one of the few Aboriginal players to reach the elite level, representing Australia in one-day cricket, and more importantly, he captained Australia's Aboriginal 11 on the 2018 tour of England to commemorate the 150 years since the first Indigenous Australian team toured the UK. Of course, I'm talking about Dan Christian. But first up, it's John Sly Sylvester. Sly, so much, thanks so much for joining us on the Bowlology Report. As a fellow Melbourneite, we're in lockdown. I've got to ask how you've been going through this whole awful pandemic.
It's giving me the shits, but basically I'm better off than most. I've got a job. I'm still faking that I'm important to a newspaper and they haven't worked that out yet, so don't tell them. And so and we haven't got a mortgage because we did the chop of books and that paid the mortgage off. So who says crime doesn't pay? So it's annoying, but when you consider what other people are going through, which is, of course, why it's so good to have the footy back and yes, some of the cricket. I mean, you just got to look back and realise that in times of real trouble, sport is that relief. Like today, we've got terrible coronavirus figures and we're told we're going to be in recession until the next ice age and that, you know, a three-course meal will be, you know, pebbles, tar and weeds. So you don't actually want to watch another three-hour subtitled documentary on coronavirus in Scandinavia. You'd rather watch a bad game of footy.
Yes. Which, unfortunately, is our team at the moment, the Hawks, Hawthorn.
When they take it to the fat side with the amount of food we're eating in lockdown, they're actually talking about us.
And I said in the intro, Sly, and obviously reading your articles for The Age and, written over 30 crime books, you got your own podcast, which we'll talk about later on. But I also mentioned English cricket fan. How did that come about?
My father was a bobby who came out here on the toss of a coin. It was either Canada or here. And he came out here and he just really, I think, as much to annoy people. He continued very much to be an English cricket fan. And I remember going to the cricket and being given a Union Jack to wave. And so you always want to suck up to your dad. And I followed Hawthorn because he followed Hawthorn. But then after a while in adulthood, I realised it really annoyed the crap out of so many people. It was just too good to let go.
Do you remember the early, what tours were these? What English players were sort of you were fans of the time?
Oh, the really first time.
We're not talking Bodyline. You're not that old, are you?
No, I'd go to 70, 71. John Snow, Basil Dollar, Vera, the end of Colin Cowdery. You know, John Snow, such a rebel. In county cricket, he sometimes would throw the ball back because he couldn't be bothered bowling. And but he was a superb bowler. And, of course...
Well, he won it in the series, didn't he? I mean, Boycott scored a lot of runs, but Snow, totally dominated. Pace and bounce.
Which is why what's happening in England now is really exciting, because we accept that to win the Ashes you need fast bowlers. And over the journey, it's been one side or the other that can terrorise. You know, you've had John Snow in that tour, you know, Thompson and Lilly and Johnson and so on along the way. And this might be the first time, Flem, where we get both sides with a swag of bowlers that can bowl 150 kilometres plus. So, and a pretty average batting lineup. But now England's got a squad, and let's see how many of them survive. Because they tend to break down. But you've got Archer, you've got Wood, you've got Ollie Stone, and you've got probably another two. Because what they've done in lockdown is they put 30 players away. And so a lot of those fringe players have been getting that exposure.
Yeah.
And so they should be coming out with at least three bowlers who are as quick as the Australians.
That's a great analogy, that, because even going further back, when England win in Australia, you've got Larwood in Bodyline, you've got Tyson in 54, and then Snow, like you said, 2010-11, whitewash, Anderson, Broad, but then remember Tremlett and Bresnan come in, did a job. To win in Australia, you're going to need a battery, because you can still get injuries, but we'll get back into that a little bit later, because I just think their depth is almost as strong in the fast bowling ranks than I've ever seen. So the Windies are fantastic in the first test, but England come back and a lot of it to level the series on the back of Ben Stokes, 250 runs in the test match. Really electrifying with the ball. When they needed some inspiration, it was a bit of a bouncer thon, but he got it done. I mean, what are your thoughts on Stokes and the development, and where can he finish off? We're talking Anderson saying he's easily the best all-rounder he played with, so ahead of Flintoff. Any all-rounder worth a grain of salt was always compared to both of them. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think both Flintoff and both of them were really, if you wanted to split bowling all-rounders, that was their first quiver. And I probably reckon that Stokes is a batting all-rounder. I think you'll see him bowl less and less. But you would have seen him in the first test where he had a plan to move about to put them off their line. And he got in his own way in the end. So he looked in such good form and got out in the 40s. And it showed how he learned. He's not one of these brutes who goes, hey, that's the way I play. In the second test, the 170-odd, he ground it out. And his muscles actually disguise his technique. He's an absolutely classic batsman. And you would have seen in the second dig that Joe Root, who we would consider as England's best batsman, was farming the strike, was taking the singles. And then he went back into that sort of 20-20 form to get the quick runs. But wasn't it weird without a crowd when he just hits a six that far and there's no noise and all Bumble says is there's no one there to throw it back?
But you're right. Like, I like how he can change gears. Like, he's almost like the first cricketer I've seen be able to do this. And that 100 last year, the match winning 100 against Australia, he started boycott-like test cricket because that's what you had to do, didn't he? He had to stop momentum for the Australians. Then he moved into a bit of one-day cricket, you know, a bit of flamboyance. Then he finished with lap sweeping quicks and full-on T20 cricket. He is a very astute cricketer. And even with the ball, and I totally agree, he won't be able to bowl, the 15 overs a day, but he knows straight away instinctively what to do. And I thought the spell, they're feeling comfortable here. It was a good partnership with the Windies. You know, let's go bounce-a-thon. You know, he's a very astute cricketer.
Yeah, I think when he started, he would fret if he wasn't getting the runs. But now he's confident that he can go 50 balls without scoring a run, with the knowledge that when he's on top, he will bring that run rate back. And you're right. At one point, they were talking about him being the second best swing bowler next to Anderson. But they needed that with the ball soft, and they needed that muscle, just banging it in, he was able to do it. And that, of course, protects your other bowlers. It's interesting because both sides, Australia and England, have for years been talking about rotating their bowlers and haven't done it. They say it, but they don't.
Yeah.
But because of these really short breaks, England's been forced to, and that's with keeping one eye on the Ashes as well. Now, you would have seen at the end of the test, a couple of the West Indies quicks, they were very, very lame. Having gone back-to-back, there was a few sore boys and they got 4 days to turn it around. And, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see what attack England takes in because...
Just to finish Stokes, though, I believe you had a couple of dealings with Sir Ian Botham, though.
Yeah, well, you've always got to be careful about meeting your heroes because it nearly never works. So I filled in for Ross Stevenson for the 3AW. He was kind enough to say there was a private dinner with Sir Ian. So I went along determined to be, you know, quite quiet in the background. That lasted about 3 seconds. So I'm up to him and I'm introduced as a crime reporter. And the bloody thing is he's absolutely obsessed with Melbourne crime, having lived here. And he said, "Have you got anything to do with that Underbelly series?" So after a period of time when he was bleeding out the ears after I kept talking at him, we had discussions where I'm trying to find out about, you know, him scoring 136 at Calcutta, and he wants to know, was it true that Lewis Moran said, "We're off here," before he got shot in the gut? So we had a great time.
Do you think there's a novel in the Ian Chappell, Ian Botham rift? Maybe you could write that could be your next crime novel.
Oh, well, that, you know, there'll be frigging social distancing on that. I'll give you the drum.
mate, you led into the English attack, and one man that spoke passionately when he was left out at the first. It was raw. It was fantastic. It was honest from Stuart Broad. So, he did talk it up, you know, what he could do, and he didn't disappoint. Well, no, there was times, you know, he did lead the attack throughout, but his spell of 3-for-1 with the second new ball just blew the test match apart. Firstly, would you have played him in the first test match? Or do you think they're just trying to, work through this group of potentially great fast bowlers?
Well, we're always better when we're left out. But, he should have played in the first test. But Anderson bowled well without a great deal of luck. But you, as the bowlologist, I think you'd love the fact that Stuart Broad went to, Sir Richard Hadlee a couple of years ago and said, "How do I extend my career?" And he changed his run-up, and just like Sir Richard, he changed his length. Now, for a bowler post-30, I'm sure you know the figures, but he's so much fuller than he used to be. Remember, he arrived and he was forced into that bang-it role, which he did okay, but his figures were not great. And now he's under 30 in the last... few years. He's taken a lot of wickets in the last 2 or 3 years. And the one in the last test where he was driven for 4, and the response from him used to be, well, you know, I'm going to drag my length back, put it up here. The next one was virtually the same and he got the edge. So he might be right. I don't think it's likely that Anderson and Broad will tour Australia. I think it will be one and it should be Broad.
Well, he mentioned, and he's great mates with Jimmy, but he gets labelled with Anderson, but he's 4 years younger.
Yeah. Yeah, and he doesn't rely, you know, totally on swing. He can swing it a bit, but, you know, it's his length. So he...
And he's also, you know, the other thing is with Broad is he's 200 centimetres. That might not come across on the TV. And facing tall bowlers, your first instinct is to go back and give yourself more time. But if they're forward... It's a nightmare.
Yeah. How many of the West Indies, their first move was back?
Yeah.
I think, you know, when we were talking about the footy and how difficult it is for the players in their hub, I'd be talking to them about the West Indies. The West Indies took a 50% pay cut, left two of their best players at home, left a place which was effectively coronavirus-free, to come to England, which was a hotspot. We're taken straight from the airport to one of those hotels which is adjacent to the ground, and they haven't left. And they've played some really, really good cricket in the process.
I see really good signs for West Indian cricket. There was a call, you know, within the last 10 years that they're all going to play T20 cricket. But what happens is... the leagues, the T20 leagues, you know, you're only as current as your last season. And, you know, you think that you look at someone like James Faulkner from Australia, who's not even 30, you would have thought that he'd be able to retire around this time from four-day cricket and play the T20 leagues, but he's out. But for the West Indies, I can see a lot of them aren't natural T20 players. A lot of their batsmen, you know, Hope, Blackwood, these types, Brathwaite, you look at, you know, Holder's not a dynamic all-rounder. Gabriel's not going to play there. Roach. So I think there's been a little shift in West Indies cricket that if you want to play, make a lot of money from cricket, that the best way to do that is representing the West Indies in Test one-dayers and potentially T20s. So I think they've started, yes, there's the Russells and co that generally play T20 cricket, but I think now they've got a core group of players who realise that the T20 bandwagon's probably not for them, and now they're investing a lot of times in West Indies cricket.
Yeah, also from all reports, the wickets in the Windies have returned to traditional, you know, true and fast, rather than just awful wickets. So you're getting better batsmen and better bowlers as a result.
And that's probably the only criticism, you know, we've got at the West Indies, and that their bowling unit was fantastic. I think Roach has been really unlucky, but he showed how mature he is now that he just kept bowling, a bit like Broad. No, well, I am unlucky. I'm going to keep testing the batsman and that'll turn around. Gabriel found it hard to back up, but it's probably the batting not going on to score hundreds that will hurt them in the next test match if they don't go on to do that. The guys that get starts, players are going to fail, but it's the starts not going on to 100 that'll hurt them.
Which is what has been traditionally England's trouble against Australia, is, you know, the Roots and so on who get 50, and a Smith would get 150. And therein lie the difference. Part of it was because of how strong the Australian attacks were, that they were still getting really good balls, you know, didn't drop off. But, yeah, there's a lot to get excited about in England v Australia.
What about have England found their opening pair, batting-wise? Sibley and Burns, they're not the most – they're definitely not David Gower and Peter May, but it's been effective. It's been working.
Well, you could see them come out here and not make a run, because the techniques are all over the shop, but they sell their wickets. And at one point, you know, England had about six, you call them stroke makers, but whatever. Now that they're saying basically, if you get an opening pair who survive 75 minutes, you're always going to have the Stokes and the and the roots coming in. Zach Crawley, I like the look of. Pretty tall for a batsman, but he can hit the ball as well, and he's going to play at three. And Ollie Pope at six is – well, he looks like Bell, doesn't he? But he's
– No, he's going to get runs. He's going to get runs.
He's terribly talented.
What about – how did you see the Archer scenario? Would you still consider him for the third test match?
Well, there was some criticism at one point with Archer that he lacked direction, but I thought that meant bowling, not actually going from one hotel to the other. He stopped off to see a friend for a couple of hours, so I'm sure they played backgammon and swapped recipes.
But, yeah, he's very big on those two pastimes.
Yes. Well, he's saying he's been sledged on social media, including racial vilification, and saying, I don't know if I'm up to playing. It's interesting that everyone's very sympathetic to that. But I think two former England captains in Atherton and Vaughan have both come out and said, you actually need to either get off social media or toughen up. You can't be saying, I can't play a test match because someone's growled at me. You saw him in the first test. And it's funny about the speed gun, isn't it? Because he wasn't anywhere near as quick as Wood. Wood was bowling at 93 mile an hour and Archer was at 85 or 86. But to the naked eye, you knew which one was more dangerous. He must have this action where you just can't see the change of pace because he hit one of them on the foot, made him retire, sconed another and had them jumping everywhere. I mean,
the biomechanics, you know, the sports side to say, you know, obviously the ball loses pace when it hits the pitch, you know, it spends time on it and then it goes. And it can't happen, but he seems to get quicker off the pitch.
Yeah.
And he's got high bounce, you know, tall release. But the batsmen look genuinely shocked, don't they?
Yeah. I think it's an interesting story because we saw him against Australia and thought, right, well, this is a decade-long fast bowler. He goes to New Zealand and they're saying, oh, he dropped his bundle because the Kookaburra wasn't doing what he wanted. And got him to bowl 48 overs and the word was he was soft. Yeah, well, he had a fractured elbow. So, you know, it would slow you down slightly, I would have thought. So the rest came at a good time. He's a rare talent. And, of course, with England having Stokes to do some of that muscle work, as we said, that they should be able to play Archer and or Wood as that explosive, no more than four over bowler.
And they've got genuine pace. So what's your bowling lineup for England tomorrow night?
I think, geez, you look at the way Woke's bowled. But you also, it's 4 days, so you should freshen it up. I would drop Sam Curran and play Archer. Yep. And I'd say, we need you, come out. And then it's the choice of between Anderson and Wokes. It's interesting because, I mean, Wokes, he bowls like Anderson in England and bowls like me everywhere else.
So. Yes. Yeah, I really like Wokes as a player, but he's almost, you can only play in England. He's not going to let you down there, and he's a fine batsman. Yeah, it's a good call to have. So we haven't even mentioned Wood there. So you know the bowling stocks for England are outstanding.
One that no one's seen is this Ollie Stone. And you would have he is legitimately quick. But he's one of those folks that can get himself injured in peculiar ways. I think he celebrated getting Muhammad Ali out in a county game and did his knee. He was out for a year from jumping too high.
They're the sort of characters you want to make it because you can be assured that that won't be a one-off.
Yeah, and there's Jamie Overton, the twin of Craig Overton. Craig. He's quick, and there's about two others in their early 20s, and they all can bowl at that speed now. You know, there's always casualties in that. But, you know, when we talk about rotations, I'm old enough to remember when there was a rest day in Test cricket. So you didn't play 5 days in a row. And now they're in, and then they had, you know, 3 weeks on the booze before the next one. And now there's, you know, 4, 5, 6 day turnarounds.
Yeah. I mean, that was significant. You know, a whole day off on a Sunday. But, hey, Si, thanks a lot for chatting today. Just to finish up, a bit like Molly Meldrum, number one with a bullet, The Naked City. What about the podcast?
Yeah, they're going really well. What I had is just, and right behind me, are sort of pods and pods and pods of old tapes, and including reconstructions with crooks and so on. So we digitalised those. So in the Naked City podcast, you actually hear from the real crooks and, you know, from the coppers. And I've gone back and spoken to a number of the investigators on some of their old jobs. So I've really enjoyed it. And we just did one with an undercover, old undercover policeman from Queensland called Keith Banks. He was a non-drinking, non-smoking, good guy teenager who joined the academy by 21. He was a dope smoking, binge drinking undercover. And I said to him, Was it stressful? He said, mate, you got to spend other people's money, wear whatever clothes you wanted, drive a car really fast, smoke dope, and carry a gun. He said, well, what wasn't it like?
Are you still amazed? You know, when you listen back to the cassettes, you know, you've obviously, you know, retain a lot of information. Is there still a lot of surprises that come up?
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, I was talking to a bloke who organised a few murders, and I'm totally faking it because when I listened, I thought, geez, I sound tough. You know, because I've got the gangster shit right down. Dropping my G's, and it's fantastic. And I did do one, which is a great tragedy. Dennis Howard Marks, biggest cannabis dealer in the world. And I got him at the North Dade Detention Centre in Florida. And he was a Welshman with he smoked a lot of dope, so he had the most Richard Burton's voice. It was just magnificent.
Oh wow, yeah.
And he told me these amazing stories, and at the end of it he said, John, I have to go, there's a man here who'd kill for the phone. And I mean that literally. But what I did was press the voice activated button, and because he was a long way away speaking softly, the tape stopped every time he spoke. So all I've got on the tape is me in nasally terms going, and then what happened? There was a Pulitzer in the frigging tape recorder.
Right there, yeah. Now you've got a lot of contacts in the underworld. We both barrack for Hawthorne. Is there any chance you can get some heavies to go to the AFL and not allow Hawthorne to play at Giants Stadium ever again?
It's too skinny for us. I think there's going to be a couple of drive-bys done at that ground very, very shortly. Yes, it's at any rate, well, this is the beauty of sitting in your study. You can go online and have a look at highlights of the scratch match to see who's likely to come up. As you know, Stephen Quatermain told us that Impey would never walk again, and he's likely to play.
He'll play next week.
Yeah, so, you know, the stem cell surgery obviously worked well.
Hey, Sly, thanks a lot for joining today for the Bowlology Report. Good luck to England tomorrow night and go the Hawks. And good luck with the podcast.
Good on you. Thanks, Flint. Cheers.
Thanks, Sly.
Christian into the attack. To clean it. First ball by D. Christian. Just off a plane from South Africa 2 days ago. Lost his gear. First game for the club. And he goes bang, first ball.
Dan Christian, welcome to the Bowlology Report. I was going to go with DC, which is your initials that we usually use for your nickname over years, but in the last couple of years, you've actually developed a new one. You're called Siri. I don't know if that was Siri's just noise then. Why are you called Siri?
Oh, that came about when I moved to Victoria. Rob Quiney, courtesy of Rob Quiney. They're not a real clever bunch, the Victorians, as you probably well know yourself, Flem. So
I was born in Perth.
So whenever I got asked a question in the change room, whenever a question was asked, I generally knew the answer. Could have been about anything. And even if I didn't know it, then I'd say the answer with enough conviction and to make it believable. So, yeah, Rob Quiney's ended up coming up. He just called me Siri one day and it stuck.
Is that the key? Even if you're guessing, if you say it with conviction, you don't get questioned?
Definitely. Definitely.
Hey, what about, we'll go back to a bit later on, but you've played for state cricket, New South Wales, South Australia, Victoria. Can you give us a little broad version of New South Wales state cricket culture against South Australia to Victoria?
Yeah, New South Wales, I didn't experience much of New South Wales, to be fair. I had two seasons of 2020 cricket there and a season as a rookie, and then one season of one day cricket, but I could never break into that Shield squad. Obviously, really, really successful team, and you had all the Aussie boys around then, so it was a pretty difficult team to break into. So, got the opportunity to go to South Australia and play down there, which was fantastic for me and my cricket at that time. I was 23, just playing my trade in grade cricket in Sydney and got the opportunity to go down there and play all three forms. And that was, like I said, that was great for my cricket. Loved the opportunity and, really, really developed. Really developed as a cricketer from there.
And then why the move to Victoria?
Moved to Victoria was I was out of the team at that stage in South Australia and got an opportunity to
okay
much do a straight swap with Andrew McDonald, who ended up being my coach and the Renegades. He was looking for a change as well, and we did the straight swap and for me personally, I wish I had have come down to Victoria earlier. We the amount of success we had and the enjoyment I had out of that five seasons with the Vics was awesome.
Well, the Vics might have won that. I don't know how much Macca actually played for South Australia over the years. As another Victorian moving to South Australia to play and playing two games, I think Matty Elliott might listen to this podcast. So over the years, I reckon the Vics have done better out of the trade with South Australia.
Yeah, might have. Herbie actually, Herbie took me under his wing when I first moved to South Australia, so... we ended up being roomies for most of that first season. That was good fun, getting to know him, and we had some good times together.
Sorry, just to change tack. So Matty Elliott, like I was lucky to play with him, and there was a time when he was going through that I thought when he makes it, he's going to be top three, top four batter in the world. Even in that, he needed a new challenge and made to South Australia. You know, what were your sort of memories there as a pure cricket technician? But then also, his mental side of the game and the way that he was building innings.
Yeah, I didn't get to play a lot of four-day. I might have only played one or two four-day games with Herb because then he went off to ICL. Him and Dizzy went off to ICL.
Oh, that worked. That worked perfectly. Yeah.
Yeah, that went well for him. Yep. but leading into that, he was dominating the one-day scene. He was the Ford Ranger Cup Player of the Year 2 years in a row. Getting to watch him and even Buff, what got to play Buff's last game as well. They both put on, I think, about 250-odd, in a one-day against Western Australia at the Adelaide Oval, and just watching them go about their work was just awesome. He was well and truly at the top of his game, particularly in that format at that stage. So, yeah, great to, as a kid coming through, great to just sit there and watch that and then, chew the fat over a beer in the chat.
Yeah, certainly Dazza Lehman was quite consistent with his methodology straight after the game. It was normally 375 mils of personality. Hey, mate, why I got on to you too was we've been in lockdown in Melbourne. So, everyone's trying to, keep sane and do different things. And I just saw a lot of posts from yourself and your great mate Glenn Maxwell in a golfing challenge. Can you talk about how that come about?
Yeah, well, Max, because there's not a lot else to do at the minute, we've both been playing a bit of golf and we haven't actually played up until a few weeks ago. We hadn't played against each other for about 12 months, and both of our handicaps had come down a bit and we were both playing okay, and we decided to...
So yeah, before that, what were your handicaps, you two?
I think he was roughly about 4 or 5 and I was around 6, and yeah, we both come down to around 1. So improved quite a bit in the last couple of months, just from not having any cricket on and being able to put a lot of time into practice and playing. Yeah.
Yeah, and then so you wanted to catch up, and what did you think? You'd try and do it for a good cause, or?
Yeah, well, we just got chatting and said, let's have a crack at it. We'll see if, Cooker and Callaway want to get involved as well, both of us being helped out by the both of those. So, and they got on board, and, yeah, we had a little competition to see who could pick the winner and win a couple of prizes. So, yeah, it worked out well for everyone that watched. And disappointing for me, he got me. We were going to have one game at his course, which is Sanctuary Lakes, one game at my course, which is Peninsula Kingswood, and then one, and then the final at a neutral venue. So we got the first game out down at Sanctuary Lakes, and I beat him down at Sanctuary Lakes. So I thought, right, I've got this done, because I've only got to beat him at Peninsula, which is my course, and I'm pretty comfortable with it there. And then next thing you know, we've had this second lockdown come and no guests allowed. So we had to go and play at neutral venues, and he absolutely flogged me.
So you had to go in your own little hub, like the AFL, just the two of you.
Yeah.
Which two courses did Maxi get the best of you?
We played Moona Links Open or Legends? Open. We played Moona Links Open, and then we played St Andrews Beach for the final round, both of them being quite wide fairways. He hits the ball absolutely miles, as you can imagine, and you've probably seen yourself. So, yeah, that extra distance just made a big difference for him. I'm hitting 4 and 5 lines into the green, and he's hitting sand wedges. So.
And you're a big hitter anyway, so that says how long Maxi is. My one game with Maxi was when Stephen Fleming took over the Melbourne Stars, and he said, can you organise a golf? And I was chairman of selectors with Glenn, because I want to get to know him, right? So with 18 holes, you certainly get to know people. And people will not be surprised, fans of Maxwell, that he doesn't hit a straight ball. You know, everything's either got to draw 20 metres or fade. And I remember there was one, it was a par 5 at the old Kingswood, which is no longer there now. That's been sold up, and obviously you guys have all moved to the Peninsula Kingswood. And he's about 230 out. There's bunkers everywhere. I can't remember the actual hole. And I was just about to say, Maxi, you're going to lay up, as he's halfway through his backswing with a 3-wood, and he hits it into the trees, miles. He got the distance, no worries. But why would I even think that Maxi would lay up? That's surely not part of his game, is it?
Well, that's actually part. No, he's not he doesn't lay up very often. But that's one part of his game that's improved. When he was off 5 or so, if the safe shot was a cut, then he'd want to hit the high draw, and vice versa. He'd always want to play the most technically difficult or the hardest kind of shot, which obviously leads itself to some inconsistencies. but no, he's improved a lot. He's getting a lot smarter with his golf. His putting's improved out of sight. He's got a pretty solid game, as you can imagine, being off 1.
Well, you're both going well, if you can both get down to scratch. But we want some cricket. So for Dan Christian, what was pre-lockdown 2020 looking for cricket-wise, and what's it like, obviously, in the middle of lockdown still?
Yeah, so pre-lockdown I was going to the UK for the T20 Blast over there, and then followed by the 100. I was playing for Notts again in the 2020s, that was going to be my 6th season there, so really looking forward to that. And then the new 100-ball competition, where Simon Kadich, the coach of Manchester, he picked me up for the Manchester Original, so that was going to be pretty exciting as well, playing that, being a part of that. And now, unfortunately, that's all, well, it hasn't all gone. The 100's gone, but the T20 Blast is still going ahead. So I'm heading over there. Early August, first game's going to be, I think, the 27th of August or thereabouts for the 2020s. Bit of a shortened comp, but, yeah, that'll be that'll be good fun. But yeah, sorry, back to the pre-lockdown. That was going to be my biggest break in probably 5 or 6 years, just having, and I was going to head over to England in early May. So finished up at the end of the BBL this year in late January, and then probably not play until May. I was really looking forward to having the break, and I really enjoyed the break. And next thing you know, the break's gone two and a half months longer than it should have. So physically feeling great, mentally feeling great, given I've had this nice long break, and I'm really looking forward to getting back into it.
And we've seen a few older players retire to play T20 cricket and really find it hard to actually maintain a high standard. You've been able to do it. You know, a few years ago, I thought someone like Bradley Hodge was able to do it. Shane Watson's been able to do it. Is it purely just making sure that you're playing enough T20 competitions each year? Or is it that you know your game that well, you know exactly what you need to do to hit each tournament flying?
Yeah, I think it's a combination, Flem. You sort of tend to know as you get older, you know yourself, you tend to know how to prepare and you know what works well for your body, whether it's you know what kind of training you do, how much bowling you do, how much batting you do, and what kind of training as well. So, yeah, that stuff for me that's been really important for me the last few years, and you know, I feel like I'm still playing some pretty good 2020 cricket. It's you get to know the other thing about getting older as well, particularly in 2020, you get to know your role, and I tend to play that middle order role with that middle order and then finishing role with the bat and bowl a few overs in the middle and occasionally have to finish at the end and run long on to long on. That's just kind of what I do. So you know, I just keep practicing those kind of things and stick to that, and you know, hopefully have a bit of success.
I've got a question for Siri. Siri, can you name all the T20 teams that Dan Christian's played in?
Do you want me to go through them?
Yes, Siri.
They might be a little bit out chronologically. I'll go, first one was New South Wales in the first year in Australia. Then I went to South Australia and played there. Then the Big Bash started and I went to the Brisbane Heat, 3. Then I went to Hampshire in England. After Hampshire, I went to, well, my English teams are Hampshire, Gloucester, Middlesex and Notts. Other BBL teams, the Hurricanes and the Renegades, so there's 8. IPL, I've had 3 IPL teams, I think. So, Deccan Chargers, Bangalore, Delhi and Pune. I've had 4 IPL teams, sorry. How many is that equal?
Don't worry about the number. You're ticking them off. You've still got a few to go.
The Trinbago Knight Riders in the CPL. Went over there and played, just got to win a competition in a week. That was good fun. Just went over for the finals and...
That's just another victory for you, yep.
Another one. The Josie Stars in the South African competition. And then Australia, I think.
So what about CPL? Was it just one team?
Yeah, that was the Trinbago, just the one team, just the Trinbago Knight Riders, yep.
All right, it's got the Barbados Trident.
No, didn't actually play for them. There was I almost agreed to head over there last year, but yeah, didn't end up going. Had some other stuff come up. So
okay. So Siri, you beat Crick Info. They've got that wrong. So I'll go into them. But what it's all about is titles, and you've won them just about everywhere. Do you have one particular favourite that stands out?
No, it's hard to pick one. I'm going to say of the 2020s, probably two that I find it hard to separate. The Renegades won a couple of years ago, particularly beating the Stars in that final. We were massive underdogs, and yeah, to get over the line in that, and just the way we played that whole season, really, we sort of scrapped our way all the way to the finals, and then to have two really.
Well, when you say underdogs in that final, I hate bring it up because obviously I'm a Melbourne Stars fan and I was commentating that day. You were underdogs at the start. You were underdogs with what, 12 overs to go, 10 overs to go.
Five overs left, yeah.
Five overs. And then it was all over with two overs to go. Melbourne, the Stars were gone. But, you know, how important – I think it showed the experience. Can you remember you and Tom Cooper, what you talked about? Like, it wasn't a massive score, but you actually put a total together, didn't you?
Yeah, we just wanted to – we were five for – I think we were about 5 for 40 when I went in, and we just said, let's just try and take this as deep as we possibly could. We knew they had good spin in Zampa and Lamichani. So we just decided to take it as deep as we could and then try and capitalise it at the death. We felt we could get some runs off him at the death. Coops always plays really well against Bravo. He's got a great record against Bravo, so he wanted to try and get hold of him, and he did towards the end. And then the other guys I felt like I was going to be able to get. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, 140, we were pretty confident with 140, and we came off the field and said probably got 15 too many. It's it was a decent track, but we just felt being a final and putting them under pressure, and knowing that we had Harry Gurney and Kane Richardson to finish for us, because no one had taken them for more than probably 40 off the last five overs in any game leading up to that. So we felt if we could get off to a decent start, we could certainly rein it in, and we didn't go like exactly how we would have thought, but it ended up being enough runs. Yeah,
experience. It's interesting, an experienced bowling lineup. You know, Boyce is a very underrated spinner. You know, Tremors did a good job, and yourself. So, is there a formula to winning? Is it strong bowling lineups? Does it depend on the competition? You know, what are the keys to winning T20 competitions?
Old blokes, I think. And I'm not just saying that because I'm an old bloke. Steve, you spoke about Stephen Fleming earlier. He showed that with Chennai a couple of years ago, and they were calling the Chennai Super Kings Dad's Army because they had Dhoni and Watto and I think Mike Huss might have still been playing. Then they were all sort of three quarters of the team were over 35, and they won easily. Faf du Plessis as well. And the idea being that you're always going to have, when you've got a team full of old blokes, I think you're always going to have someone that's going to have been in a certain situation that's going to be able to stand up when the team's under pressure. You know, young blokes are going to come in and do some brilliant stuff, of course, so it's always great to have those guys in your team too. But I think when you're under pressure, your old blokes are the ones that tend to perform more consistently under pressure.
So for T20, is it a very underrated form of the game for the mental side of the game and the tactical side, and hence that's why older players that know their game well seem to perform well?
Yeah, probably more so than any other format, I think, because you one over or you know, one wicket can win or lose you the game in 2020 cricket. 4-day cricket or the longer form of the game, you can always fight your way back into it if you have a bad few overs or even a bad session, you can fight your way back in, I think. But 2020, it can just always be those, you know, that one good over with battle ball that can win you the game.
Moving on from T20, obviously you played a lot of Shield cricket and your first class cricket, Monday cricket there. You almost got there. You almost got your bag of green on your head. You were 12th man. For Australia, you obviously played one-day cricket and T20 cricket. Probably the peak of those was a 5 and a hat-trick in a one-day game. But, how close were you actually to playing that test match and how quickly you sort of were moved on?
Yeah, I had I was called into the squad for the last test against New Zealand down in Hobart in the 11-12 season. And just missed out there, and then was in the Boxing Day squad against India and just missed out there as well.
What was the role, DC? Was it mainly batting all-rounder?
Yeah, batting all-rounder. So Shane Watson was injured at the time.
Okay.
So, brought me in as that fourth seamer option to go with the quicks around then, I think would have been Sids, Mitch Stark, James Pattinson, who else was around then? I think Ben Hilfenhaus was, and then
is Mitch Johnson still playing? Jono still playing?
I don't think Mitch was then. He'd either finish or he might have been injured as well. Yeah. I can't remember exactly. But anyway, I ended up, yeah, missing out, unfortunately, because they ended up going with this other guy to bat at six, Hussey, Mike Hussey, I think his name was, and he ended up having a
pretty He's the brother of David, isn't he?
Yeah, that's him. That's him, yeah. So he ended up having a decent career. When you look back in hindsight, then it would have been nice, but you can understand the decision not to play me, I guess.
But at least you got the yellow cap on your head. Can you remember the five from the hat trick?
Yeah, I can.
Was the hat trick ball out?
It was plumb. It was absolutely plumb. Well, it looked plumb.
Oh,
lucky it wasn't the DRS. I was pretty lucky.
I thought he got caught, but yeah, okay.
It was no DRS that series. It was a tri-series India and Sri Lanka. And the Indians didn't want the DRS, so I got lucky. I was first wicket, Tisara Pereira, tried to hit it for six at the MCG. Mike Huss caught on the fence, almost fell over the rope, lobbed it back in, caught it himself. And then, yeah, there was a little bit of reverse. The ball looked like it would reverse a bit. So I'm pretty sure the next one was Dinesh Chandamal. Just tailed in, hit him on the board. Rod Tucker went up with me. Good old Tuck. Tuck used to umpire me back in the day in Sydney grade cricket when I was coming to I talked him into that one, and then the next one was exactly the same. Kulasekara, same thing. Tailed back in, looks plumb, but yeah, they showed the DRS. The Hawk got after it, wouldn't hit the fourth set. So you know, I got away with one, but good fun, great memory.
And what about T20 cricket? You only end up playing 16 games for Australia, the last back in 2017. What sort of feedback, you know, you've had a brilliant T20 career, say in the last 5 years, 6 years, what's been the feedback from selectors, if at all?
Nothing recently, really. I suppose that's one of the things you get when you get older. And starting to know my role. I played for Australia well before I knew the right role for myself. Went to three World Cups and only played two games in those three World Cups of 2020 cricket. So 2010, 2012, 2014. So it would have been nice to get a bit more of an opportunity, particularly now, like I said, that I know what my best role is in the team. But it's just the way it goes. You try and do your best, and if you get picked for Australia, fantastic. If you don't, then more than happy to just keep trying to win competitions.
And no doubt, Siri, one of the highlights of your career would have been captaining the Indigenous team to England in 2018. You know, it was signifying 150 years before that. People talk about the first Indigenous team to tour England. It was the first Australian team, wasn't it, to tour England back then. Can you talk about how big a privilege was that? How did it come about? Some of the players. And then also, you know, how many of the players, actually knew a lot about what happened, in the previous tour back 150 years ago?
Yeah, that was great fun. It was a fantastic tour and a real honour to be a part of. That was actually the first sporting team to leave Australia's shores 150 years ago, that 1868 team. They all came from Western Victoria and were smuggled in a boat, in the bottom of a boat, over to the UK because they weren't legally allowed to leave the country. So that was a pretty, extraordinary stuff in itself. Went over and I can't remember exactly how many games they played, but they were over there for a while, played a lot of cricket. And part of our going over was learning a bit more about it. And we all had, we all represented one of the players from that trip. So on our shirts on the back, instead of having Christian, we had the names of those each individual player, whichever one we represented.
Oh, so fantastic. Yeah,
pretty cool. And Johnny Muller,
and he was the best player, wasn't he? Muller was the
yeah, well, he was player. Yeah, he was the all-rounder and the captain, and did a bit of everything. So it was a real honor to wear his shirt and have his name on my shirt.
And did they map it out for as much as they knew, games or grounds that the previous tour had played on?
Yeah, we sort of tried to mimic the tour as much as we could, which was pretty cool. We spent most of the time in we spent a lot of time in London. We were based in London, and we played down at Arundel Castle, played a game up in Derby, played a game at my home ground at Notts, Trent Bridge, and a few other club grounds, and yeah, wherever they went around, which was really cool. Got to catch up with the Aussie team at Lords, and they were there for a one-day series against England as well at the same time. So, yeah, got to catch up with them, and yeah, we all got a photo. All the teams got a photo, and the women's Indigenous team got a photo as well.
Girls were there as well, and there was a few first-class players. You know, Doggett,
yeah.
Big Scotty Boland.
Yeah, we couldn't get we. Darcy was supposed to be on the trip, Darcy Short, but Darcy was in the Australian one-day team at the time, so which was great for him, fantastic opportunity for him to be doing that. But, yeah, we missed out on having him for our tour. But, no, and some guys that have done really, really well in first grade in their respective states got that opportunity as well. So, yeah, some pretty exciting cricketers in there, and, you know, hopefully we can – hopefully that
– And you're doing – you're doing work in that space too, DC. You're still involved with Cricket Australia, helping out with the Indigenous program. And do you feel like, I mean, you mentioned those names there. You know, I reckon going back 20, 25 years ago, you know, we just didn't have Indigenous players playing in state cricket. So do you think it's starting to grow and that we will start to see more Indigenous players playing for Australia? You know, obviously Ash Gardner's doing that in the women's space, but we want to replicate that in the men's space as well.
Yeah, of course. One thing that's the old Impaja Cup that's now become the National Indigenous Cricket Championships, they play up in Alice every year. That's I think that's become a really viable pathway, I think, for young Indigenous kids. That grows every year. They get more and more teams every year. There's the serious side, if you like, where it's, I don't know if you call it serious side, but it's where it's, you know, New South Wales against Queensland, against Victoria, against Tassie, everyone has a team in. And then you've got the community one as well. The community competition is made up of, you know, teams from sort of community teams all around the NT or Queensland or wherever, and they just have a fantastic time, and it's a real great celebration of both our culture and of the game of cricket for a you know, 3 or 4 days up in Alice. So, yeah, like I said, I think it's become a viable pathway, I think, for kids then to move into the game and then move into their grade cricket around the states as well. So it's you know, hopefully it continues to encourage the kids to take up the sport.
Definitely, and we're encouraging you to have a good time over in England. More importantly, Siri, have you got the opportunity to get your golf game down to scratch over there, or is it too much cricket?
Yes. No, there'll never be too much cricket, Flem. That's one of the great things about the UK summer. You and I had a couple of games over there a couple of years ago. The sun doesn't go down till 10 o'clock at night. So if you really want to, you can go to the pub for dinner and then go and play 18 holes. It's fantastic. And, yeah, I've one of the great things I love about going to England in the winter, you can play lots of, in the summer or their summer, you can play lots of golf and get all your cricket in. It's a great time to be over there.
DC, thanks a lot for joining us on the Bowlology Report. Good luck.
No worries, Flem. Thanks for having me, mate.
Well, that's hit hard as well. That clears the rope. The third six for Dan Christian. Just when the
Well, that's it for the Bowlology Report. Big thanks to John Sly Sylvester. Make sure you check out his podcast, The Naked City. And also, if you're into your crime reading, read the Underbelly series if you haven't already. And Dan Christian, talking about the tour to England, the Indigenous tour. Plenty of books, great books about it. The Cricket Walkabout, The Strangers Who Come Home, and also a book on the life of Tom Wills, who invented Aussie rules footy, but also was a fine cricketer and had a bit to do with that first tour to England back in 1868. Thanks a lot for listening. Make sure you subscribe, and we'll be back next week. Stay safe.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.